Welcome back to Metal Life and Creative Disturbance. My name is Yvonne Tina, and today I'm sitting with Camilla Pang from University College of London. This is the second part of our podcast about bioinformatics and the possible connection with art and culture. So, Camilla, you see art and science as ways to communicate points of view and understandings. This places you in a very specific place in art study and theory that is close to, the aesthetics of communication, which can be opposed by other views. For example, some claim that art has nothing to do with communication, that it has to do with resistance, for example. So can you please develop more on this idea and the bridges you see between art and science, or why you support art-science collaborations?
Yes, so the use of art as a communication tool of concepts is very powerful. It's a visual means to relate to the local events that are seen by others from different points of view, and how this contributes to what's going on in the global picture. So this can be a painting or just the emotional response to a series of logic. So they often argue that when you see a painting, some of us don't connect with it, and the ones that you do, it evokes an emotional response. And that, ironically, is art itself, because you are, in effect, empathizing with the artist because you see what they see.
Mm-hmm.
So, I could talk about this for ages. So, for example, I actually went to an art gallery today and had a look. And, for example, I remember thinking about the different ways to paint, and that when you paint, you often get focused onto the minute details and how they'll look, and you try and make them look like how you'd want them to look in the bigger picture, but actually this doesn't often do the case. So this local focus doesn't do the canvas justice, nor did it fill the picture. So I think it's about exploring the space to see how the more vague, like more finer details fit together at the higher levels of abstraction, as opposed to just considering the local event itself. And I don't know whether I've explained that, but in science we can get stuck in this rut of abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
And such as in specific fields, not look out. But we need to bring them together coherently. And I think art is a really good reminder of how we can bring these local events into the bigger picture, quite literally, and how they all innately just fit together in one perspective.
Okay, makes sense. So the first time we talked, because we had a previous Skype call before having this meeting, You emphasize very much on the importance of science communication and society in your own practice. So do you believe that the artist has a role to play in the appropriation of scientific knowledge, or in the wellness of the society in general?
Yeah, I definitely do. It's left quite separate to science, which confuses me, because I always thought they're inextricably linked, especially in the realms of psychology, because that's where they meet. So the use of art is inherently subjective. I mean, it's even used in advertising to portray concepts of human nature and how this evokes behaviour. But this is also the case with science. So despite our efforts to make it objective as possible, it is also subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And art will highlight these discrepancies that we see on an everyday scale,
mm-hmm.
which in turn's enabling us to establish our own biases, and biases in our decisions that we make every day, whether they be how to optimize our work routine or the way that we do analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So it will highlight these discrepancies, which is the first step, actually, in acknowledging and uniting the different outlooks, and how these in turn can actually complement and forming the bigger picture itself. So it does depend on what the artist in question is trying to portray.
Mm-hmm.
But the bridge between art and science is within the field of psychology.
Oh, you think so? Okay.
So, yeah, so an artist, they all have a rhetoric they want to portray or a message. So sometimes it could be an aesthetic message that you can immediately relate to. and look at and go, wow, like pop art. So Andy Warhol is very accessible because you can immediately see what's going on, whereas some are more hidden. They have a more hidden meaning depending on what bits the artist wanted to highlight.
Mm-hmm.
They have a more mental connection, such as Francis Bacon and Marlene Dumas and all of these. Yeah, which make them more humanistic.
Mm-hmm. So, again, some might argue that artists have been producing very disturbing works for a long time, and those were definitely not trying to improve anything. When it wasn't to reflect their own relationships to the world. So, any comment about that?
Yeah, I think an artist can either create work to try and improve something they believe in, or just to express something that is making them discontent, and therefore, by definition, would need to improve on. So, disturbing arts are an incredible opportunity and an outlet for a person, giving us an insight into their inner view and mental landscape and to what's going on, their decision, their biases, their overall outlook, which in turn affects their decision making. And this mental state, as it were, is the cause of their mental past and what they've been exposed to. So those that are actually able to create such works that effectively portray this, and which are not in line with society, are deemed controversial. But these are actually drivers to an evolving society as it questions the current standards and psychological limits of society, whether it be feminism, such as Marlene Dumas, and I'm sure there are others, or I guess in turn Andy Warhol in the mockery of contemporary culture. So... Mm-hmm. Those that are actually able to create such creative disturbances, as it were, mm-hmm. are by definition on the limits of society and should be considered a sacred source. We need these. We need these shocks as a society to evolve.
Okay, thank you. But on a personal level, as someone who has both synesthesia and the Asperger syndrome, someone who is both a scientist but also has an art practice on the side, I'd like to know what are for you the best examples of blending of both art and sciences. And it can be anything from algorithm to petri dishes, etc.
It's hard because it's hard to separate them. So I got to really think about this because they're inextricably linked because there's different parts of, I guess, the information process of being human. And I say that crudely because there's memory, there's perception, there's interpretation, processing, expression, and all of these are interlinked with cognition, and they are inextricably dependent on one another to survive. And they're complementary. So both of these mean that I'm quite sensitive to my surroundings, and I take a lot in. There's just no filter, especially my synesthesia that enables me to interlink senses, which doesn't make it simpler. So I've really had to untie a lot of the stimuli that comes in, which can be quite tiring. But I've had to make these to not get overwhelmed or make wrong decisions based on input signals that I deem as important.
Mm-hmm.
With my Asperger syndrome, is, I guess, the process in which I interpret these thoughts. And this is why those within the autistic spectrum are considered to be wired differently, because we quite literally are wired differently. Like many other people, like everyone's wired differently. This is why it's called a spectrum. But it's to such an extent that it does affect everyday life, especially when you're sensitive to senses, or even more so. But my expression, how I express this, is very is artistic by nature, because I want to show that not everyone's like this, and if they are, then you're not alone. This is something that you shouldn't feel like any less of a person, because a lot of the time, if you're a bit different, you can get discriminated against, which is completely natural.
Mm-hmm.
But with this, it can be used to your advantage, because it makes you different and makes different decisions.
When have you been aware of your synesthesia and Asperger syndrome?
I was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome since I was 8 years old.
Okay.
And my synesthesia when I was, well, similar time, really. Similar time.
Okay. Okay. Would you say that this is what this is what brought you to pay more attention to art and painting, music? Is it because you've been diagnosed synesthesia that you started to pay attention more to colors and sound and stuff?
No, it's something that I didn't know I had it. You obviously don't know you have it until mm-hmm. someone points it out to you that you perceive something as different. You're like, oh, this day feels a bit lemony. it just sounds a bit weird. And my friends are like, what are you on about? So no, I just did that regardless because I just felt like I couldn't not do it. I had a biological impulse for me to do the things that were an outlet for me naturally, which was drawing and playing music and piano. And also writing about it, mm-hmm. but the fact that there was a label to it just made me think, ah, okay, it's an actual thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, now I would like to come back to the biological and informatic influence in your research. So I'm curious about the distinction that you make between data and materials. So when I read you, I feel that everything is a data for you. Is that true, first? Mm. And is organic matter and algorithmic information the same thing for you?
So there are different types of data, like there's different types of information. Data doesn't necessarily mean cold hard numbers. To me, it just means sensory input, stimuli, what goes the input to all of the decision-making and memory processes that we make on an everyday basis. So I guess in this sense, my Asperger's, I spent my entire life trying to process information on a really, I guess, what it seems higher scale in terms of the volume, because there's no filter,
mm-hmm.
especially with regards to people and determining behaviours, which are just inherently complex and messy, not to mention subtle,
mm-hmm.
and that can be quite hard. So in this regard, there are different types of data. So a lot of people have this instinct built in, and I've had to build mine from scratch, this whole machine learning algorithm, if you call it that, which feeds data in,
mm-hmm.
which can be body language, it can be images, it can be sounds, it can be anything. It was how I just decomposed complex social nuances in order for me to actually build my predictor, as it were, mm-hmm. so I could adhere to social norms and function in society. So, as much as I decompose, I do know that all of these rules I've made and events I've played out in my head are all just part of one big landscape, which is why I'm all for the use of this in my research, because I just know that this is the case. We need to bring it all together somehow.
Mm-hmm. So as you know, on this channel, we try to cover the field of art and artificial life, be it carbon-based or silicium-based. So I would love to have your take on artists using living organisms, such as the case with bioartists.
I think it's really good to see artists that use, stereotypical products used in science, because it does show what they do and what they represent, and also the everyday lives of scientists and the efforts used to make them. So in terms of bioartists, so I had to think, let me think about this.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a visual message and a mental message. And in terms of in a bioartist, we can see the ones that have visual message quite easily, such as those, Victoria Burge. So she is an artist that uses constellations and joins them up in a network-based form, and it's very beautiful. But it's also demonstrating a data type as such of interconnectivity,
mm-hmm.
a constellation, and I really like this. It was very nice to see, but that's what makes me tick. That's the bio art that makes me tick. I mean, someone else might not be in bio tradition. They might see something different that they connect with that reminds them of their science and their decision-making process. So trying to pinpoint scientists, which are bioartists, is subjective by nature.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other ones for me that I not relate to, but I connect to on a scientific level,
mm-hmm.
Especially the ones with Francis Bacon, because he was one of the quite controversial for his time, and he was a philosophical advocate and practitioner of scientific method during the scientific revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of his work is very, if I say it's very raw, if that makes any sense. So his paintings are kind of paint humans in their natural organic forms, almost like flesh, as opposed to unique entities. It kind of brings us down to the biology of what we are, and also in turn evoking an emotional response, which I think is very powerful. So all of that was based on his thoughts and emotions of him growing up, especially for his time. So it all depends on the visual but mental message. But everyone is a different artist they connect to.
Yeah, I see that there's a recurring word which ties to this communication idea, which is message that you use.
Yeah, or rhetoric.
All right.
Either.
So you see art as a way to communicate or to improve communication?
Yes, in one aspect, in raising awareness, but also in terms of inspiration for how different people view different things in different ways and different levels of detail, and how these in turn fit in with what the artist on a global level is trying to represent.
Thank you so much, Camilla, for your time today.
Thank you.
If you want to learn more about camellias and bioinformatics, we invite you to check out our website, creativedisturbance.org, the MetaLife channel. Have a good day. Bye-bye.